and I'm with Stephen Willoughby. We are here in Lampeter, where both of us, Stephen, a decade apart, did our degrees, it turns out, in the same subject in theology.
That's right, yes. I was here from 1984 to 1987. And it was great. It was a great place. It was a great environment to study theology and great lecturers. And of course, we, even though we were across the decades, we had some of the common lecturers. Of course, your great friend who's been on this podcast previously, Dr. Paul Badham, and also the Professor D.P. Davis, great New Testament scholar, and D.G. Selwyn. And of course, P.M.K. Morris, yeah. He'd retired by the time you were here, but he taught us the Old Testament studies and stuff like that, so that was really good as well.
Yeah. And has it had an impact on you, you know, doing both the Lampeter experience, but also doing the degree in theology? Because I think you did a master's in a completely different subject area, didn't you?
I did, yes, because when I left here in theology, the two things to go into is being carrying on as an academic in there as a lecturer, which is, of course, what you do, yeah. Chris. Or being a teacher, or being a vicar, a minister, or something like that. And I didn't want to do any of those. So I ended up as a computer operator. And from there, I went on and did a MSc in computer science at Aberystwyth. And actually, the sort of career I've ended up in, that was actually more relevant to what I'm working in now than the sort of the theology degree. But I think for me, it was a good example of broadening, because I'm a sort of Christian, broadening my sort of Christian faith, listening to different views. It also gave me a good chance when I'm reviewing technical reports in my current role or writing reports to weigh up different arguments. Because in engineering now, which is what I work in now, you have to look at different solutions and weigh up, you know, what the pros and cons of each solution is. And of course, in theology, you're looking at different people's theories about different things, different people's interpretations, and you have to weigh up which one you would go with. And so it's really helped me as a good background in arts subjects to do that.
You see, I think that you've just done the best PA for subjects like theology, because what you've proven, and it's not something that I, in all honesty, would even have picked up on at the time, that the skill set, it's not just about, oh, the content, like you're studying world religions or you're studying theology, therefore you should become a minister or an academic, quite the opposite. Yeah. The skills that you learn in terms of organisation and structure, think of, you know, the process of writing an essay or a dissertation, you've actually been able to take with you into what, on the surface, is a very, very different career.
Yeah, because I work in quality assurance, and that has been my career for over 30 years now. And so I go around doing a lot of audits, you know, checking people are complying to various processes, company processes, the company I work for, external standards. And there as well, again, you have to, when you're working in quality assurance, you know, you have to sometimes do what I call it a skill. And it's difficult to explain because I'm mentoring some young people now, and it's difficult to explain to them that experience of weighing stuff up, of sort of looking at pragmatic solutions and looking at the different sort of arguments and theories that you get. And, you know, you can get have a lot of debate about things about theology as much as people get, I suppose, about politics now as well. But, you know, it's coming to that view that you think is the sort of right solution and what you want to go with and what you'd recommend as a way forward. And I think it's, as I look back over my life, that's been very, very valuable skill to have in my career, which has been more in that sort of quality assurance area.
And have people over the years, Stephen, asked you about your theology background? And do they sort of look quizzically and think, oh, what's that got to do with it? Do they, you know, I mean, I often say this, and I've had it with, you know, when I'm writing references for students, they go off in all sorts of areas, in business, and, you know, there's no obvious corollary, if you like, from their degree. But has anyone sort of taken the reverse step and thought, oh, you've got this background in theology, and yet you're now doing what you're doing, and are they sort of intrigued as to the journey that you've taken?
I don't think really now, because the thing that more carries weight, actually, is my final degree, which was like you know, done a PhD degree, yeah. And that's related in research to what I actually work in, which is quality assurance. But again, you know, in quality, you've got various, you know, theories in quality, and it's more of a business-related degree, although I would still place that in the humanities area. And I think, you know, I think that one sad thing about, you know, particularly where we are now, Lampeter, it was, you know, it's an all-humanities university, is that although I've worked for an engineering company, so I'm a bit hypocritical here saying it, it's good to focus on STEM subjects and getting the people in with, you know, those sort of physics or maths degrees and stuff. And my oldest son's doing a maths degree, so, you know, so it's good to do that. But I think it's lost something with that good humanities background and that sort of, that, you know, being able to sort of weigh up and look at the different arguments and get different views and then come to your own conclusion as well.
Yeah. And tell me about how the journey started for you, because I know you live in Derbyshire, is that right?
That's right, yeah. Yes.
Is that where you're from originally?
No, I'm not, no. So I'm actually from, you know, the same county where you present a radio programme, Kent, but a bit more into the London part of Kent. So I was brought up in Orpington in Kent, so I went to school near there, and then I actually did languages at A level. So I did French, German, and actually politics at A level. I only did politics, but it's because the options, I really wanted to do French and German, because I loved sort of languages at school, and I wanted to do history, but with those options, I couldn't do that at my school. Yeah. So I had to do sort of politics as a sort of secondary one to history. And then I came here, which I did theology. I was originally supposed to be doing German and theology joint, but I found the theology so fascinating and interesting that I dropped the German. Although actually, ironically, because I had to spend a year with work about 15 years ago working in Germany, of the sort of directly helping my work and what I do with work, the German has come in more useful when I was working there and in my working life than actually the theology in some respects.
Well, no, and also in the same way that people associate me, obviously, when I'm in a place like this here in Lampeter, I have this, as you do, a background in arts, humanities, specifically indeed in teaching and researching in theology. Yeah. But the thing I want to move on to now is that hinterland, although sometimes the hinterland, as other people might see it, might actually be the thing that really defines who you are. Because I know that, like me, you have a huge passion for radio.
Yeah, I love radio. I first got my first radio set. I was given it for my, must be about 7th birthday, I think it was, back in 1973. That's revealing my age now. When I got my first little tranny, it was a Philips portable tranny, which then picked up then, just medium wave and long wave. Now, you remember, they're phasing those out now, of course. I think Radio 4 Long Wave are either in the process of or have shut down. I mean, I don't listen to long wave anymore, of course. But that was my first radio set, and I immediately fell in love. It's been like a friend. And over the years, I've listened to a variety of different radio stations, which has reflected my background in music. Now, would you believe it? When I first started listening to the radio, I listened to Radio 3, BBC Radio 3, which back in those days, in the sort of early 70s, was still trying to shake off its ethos of the old former Third programme, if people know anything about history. So it was still very sort of like, you know, speaking in a quite sort of avuncular sort of style. But I liked it, and I fell in love with classical music. But then it was wanting to learn an instrument at school, when I went to secondary school, that I got they chose the trombone for me, which I played very badly at school. I don't play it anymore. But that gave me a love of jazz as well. So then I branched out into radio, some of the Radio 2 programmes as well around jazz. And then through Radio 2, I got into some of the more poppy stuff from friends at school. And of course, when I came here, I had a Philips ghetto blaster. Again, radio was a thing that helped me. When I first landed here and came into my room, actually in the hall of residence where we're recording this, the first thing I did was, I'd had this, for my 18th birthday, I was given this big Philips Ghetto Blaster. Do you remember those?
I do. I had one.
Yeah, a big Philips Ghetto Blaster for my 18th, which I brought to uni with me. I went round twiddling around, finding what radio there was there. And back here then, in those days, right in mid-Wales, you could only get Radio 2, Radio 3, and the Welsh language, BBC's Welsh language programme, because the old good old crackly medium wave was quite bad by then, because I'd advanced on to FM by then, because particularly in the sort of late 70s, they swapped around all of the BBC frequencies on medium wave. And so that's when Radio 4 came on long wave. It used to be Radio 2, of course. And Radio 3 moved to a very bad medium wave frequency. So I sort of went over to listening to it on FM then. And my first sort of FM radio was in sort of, I think it was around my 79. So I'd have probably been about, it was probably my 13th birthday. I got an Indesit FM radio that would also... You could had a slot on there to pick up the 49 meter band of short wave, so you could listen to the BBC World Service. Sometimes within that, some of their programmes, because the BBC World Service, which of course you get now in the UK, on and around the world, of course, because this is global. Of course, as a podcast, used to be sometimes on medium wave, but used to share other language services with that, and the English service. And then, of course, studying German at university in this 49 meter band shortwave, I used to listen on shortwave. Some German domestic radio stations used to broadcast on shortwave as well back in those days. So I used to it gave me a love of the sort of world and global stuff, because I used to listen to some German programs and to help me with studying German on the shortwave as well.
When you're describing that, I think what you said earlier about radio as a friend.
Yeah.
It really, particularly because we're doing this from the place where both of us, albeit, as I say, a decade apart, did our studies. And radio for me, because I was, this is the pre-internet era. The radio was my connection. And it also, particularly, interestingly, national radio, because, of course, all the different places where we all came from were in some way accommodated. It was always, there was an occasion, actually, I remember when I was actually in Lampeter, and it was in about 1999, and Ed Stewart, I was listening in Lampeter, and Ed Stewart was on one afternoon, and he read out a message from a regular listener in Lampeter, and I stopped and I thought, somebody else in Lampeter is listening to this. But also, of course, we'd all have friends around the country, indeed in some cases around the world, and the radio felt like that was the means that allowed all of us somehow to have that point of connection, and we felt that it was a home from home.
Yeah, and I always remember here in my first term, listening, it was during the Children in Need appeal, and it was on Radio 2, and it was when David Hamilton, now of course of the wonderful Boom Radio, used to present a show on afternoon show on Radio 2, and I remember listening to him on that and doing the Children in Need stuff, and my first term, it was still Cherry Wogan's original stint as the breakfast show host. He finished first time around in 84, and then, of course, he came back 10 years later. But it was his original stint then. And people like Ken Bruce, I remember listening to when he did the breakfast show for a bit. Now, of course, on Greatest Hits Radio, of course. So I remember that, very fondly. And, it was a connection in with what, as you say, with what was happening in the sort of, in the wider global world. You were here in Lampeter, but there was still something happening in the wider country
and you mentioned as well, because you were talking about jazz earlier, and something that also I remember, because I've always been a bit of a night owl, although that indeed that's also the name of a program that used to go out in the US. But there was it Digby Fairweather on Radio 2, and there used to be a jazz parade, and it used to go out after the midnight news on weekdays, followed by the Night Ride programme that would have a range of hosts, like Steve Madden did it for years, and Alex Lester as well. And that would go out at like 12:35 in the morning. So there's always that sense that, so, and it was only half an hour, But that was a lovely bridge between the evening programmes, like the Jamesons, or and then before, you know, the nighttime. And that was my accompaniment. And I would literally, in later years I had a clock radio and I managed to have a timer, but it would send me to sleep. And I would go to bed with something on the radio and it was very tranquil. And it made me feel, particularly when I was living on my own, very much at ease.
Yeah, it is good. And what I particularly liked as well on Radio 2, because my side of jazz is more sort of big band music with the trombonist, was a guy called Alan Dell.
And Sundays.
Sunday afternoons. And I used to listen to that in my room here. And also, and since then as well, he was a doyen of the Sunday afternoons. And I remember, I think there was a recent, when they sort of recently swapped around taking people off Radio 2 more recently, but when they threatened to take him off Sunday afternoons, there was demonstrations outside Broadcasting House and things like that back in those days. That was the pull of people like that. And he used to do the big band show as well on a Sunday evening, sadly now dropped by Radio 2. It was the final sort of caretaker of that, if you like, was the great Claire Teal, you know, jazz singer of course herself, and she was bumped off that on Radio 2, and then she moved across onto Jazz FM, but they've since bumped her off that as well. When you think that a jazz related music programme, you think that Jazz FM would keep it on, so it always seems a bit strange there. But she was the final host of that with a guy called Malcolm Laycock in between, who I used to listen to on Radio London when I was doing my A levels on a Sunday afternoon alongside Alan Dell. She had to record one, and you know, now you didn't have anything like BBC Sounds in those days where you could do catch up and do them both. You had to physically record something in those days.
And also the structure that it afforded, because it used to drive my parents mad, because I on a Sunday always had to be back in order to catch the charts at 5 o'clock on a Sunday. But in other words, in those days, apart from maybe later in the evening, you'd be able to get all the details on CFAX. And yes, there were periods, including on Top of the Pops on a Thursday on TV, where you'd be able to catch up and hear it all again. But because it had to be live, my recollection from those days is that we didn't have social media, but we, either in the playground the next day or occasionally a telephone call with our friends from school. Did you hear that song? It made it all the way to number one. We weren't expecting it. There was a genuine excitement, and it was the liveness of it that made it. Wasn't so now you have BBC Sounds, you can catch on here the whole programme that may have been done live afterwards, and it's terrific that we have that opportunity, but nothing beat live radio.
Yeah, because that's right. And I remember back in those days, in the early 80s, Radio 2 and 1 used to have to share FM together. It was before Radio 1 got its own FM. And so it used to have these programmes on Radio 2, sort of nostalgic Sunday afternoon programmes that I liked, you know, because I like that sort of music, like Alan Dell and stuff. And then it used to go over to Radio 1 at 5 for the charts, but that was still great because I still liked to listen to that. It was contemporary music, and I remember it was Simon Bates was presenting it in those days, of course, again on Boom Radio now as well, of course. So giving a plug, you can put the check in the post afterwards for the advert for Boom Radio for
But what comes out of our conversation, and this certainly applies to me as well, is the whole nostalgia that and when you mentioned about Alan Dell, because there may have been executives at the time who perhaps didn't see, or you know, maybe they were thinking, oh, we want younger, you know, we're aware that this was the argument that happened after the Francis Lyne era at Radio 2, that it was good at accommodating those people in their 60s, 70s onwards. Yeah. But what about people who would, you know, was there anyone to take their place? So what about you? I mean, I was an anomaly because I was in my late teens, early 20s, and I devoured all of this stuff because it was also a way of putting me in touch with my parents' musical tastes.
Yeah.
So it was that generational connection. Yeah. But that may not have been, obviously, what, from the radio station's point of view, was really going to bring the audiences in.
And it's interesting when you talk about audiences, because I found, particularly from the time I was here, particularly Radio 3 then, I found, I occasionally listened to it, but it had a period during the... there was a new controller who was more a concert promoter, and it didn't become, to me, it didn't become accessible as a radio station. It didn't become like a friend anymore, as radio, the sort of, you know, on Radio 2 did in those days. And there wasn't really an output for classical music till Classic FM started in you know, a decade or so later, which is when you'd have been here, I think, probably. Yeah, so Classic FM made classical music, for me, more accessible again when that started. But back to Radio 2, and you were saying earlier about, you know, identifying your audience. Of course, that was why one of the reasons why David Hamilton left Radio 2, I think, was what you say during the Francis Lyon era. So it's quite ironic now he's ended up on Boom Radio. And actually, when we first moved to where we live now in the East Midlands, in Derbyshire, there was a radio station then which has now become a part of a big conglomerate, has become Smooth Radio. It was then called Saga Radio, that was aimed at the sort of, you know, the Saga generation. And he was actually on that as well. And another station they did nationally called Prime, for a bit, called Primetime Radio. And he was also on that as well. So it's quite ironic. He's, you know, he left Radio 2 because they were going like that. But now he's come on these older, as he's got older himself, in his 80s now, and he's still going very strong and still excellent radio programme. He's sort of come on these stations like Boom Radio or Saga and stuff.
There is an irony
yeah.
that at the time, I think it was 86 or thereabouts, yeah. when he left Radio 2,
yeah.
He said that, you know, effectively there's only so much Vera Lynn, you yeah. know, that he could yeah. play. And then, of course, now the argument is that Radio 2 is just competing in a different sort of marketplace because it's trying to outdo Radio 1, or it plays the sort of music that
yeah.
he... But I suppose there is a consistency because yeah. back in the 80s, in that era that we've just been identifying, you know, people of his generation may not have wanted to hear lots of music from the Second World War.
Yeah.
But I suppose the consistency is that it's the music from the 60s
yes.
and 60s. The 70s that actually yeah. is his era. And Radio 2, certainly by the 90s, it was fully accommodating that. But there was a period, as you say, when it was very sort of 30s, 40s music. And it was nice that there was a place for it on national radio.
Yeah, but not all the time.
But it wasn't, you know, it was almost saying to a younger audience, yeah. this isn't a home for you.
Yeah, because when I was here, I think before they went into that, they played a good mix. So I remember, actually, when you talked about the charts, I remember listening in the room here, David Hamilton's show, when he used to, on Radio 2, we couldn't get Radio 1 here. Where we were was a black blind spot for Radio 1 in those days. And so David Hamilton, on his drive time show on a Tuesday, always used to summarise what was in the charts and play some of the, you know, some of the top three in the charts on a Tuesday afternoon on Radio 2. And then he used to have some of the golden oldies and some of the other people there on that day. But they also had on another great broadcaster, David Jacobs, as well. I used to sit here in my subsequent years and listen to, have my lunch in here listening to David Jacobs. And so that was equally very good as well. And he, of course, ended up on a Sunday night programme. But then when I moved back to London, it was the period when all these independent local radios were starting to realise they could split their frequencies between FM and AM, medium wave, if you remember. And on medium wave, they put on a lot of golden oldies radio stations. And so in London, it was a station I really liked in London, which was Capital Gold. And that is, they'd recruited a lot of the former Radio 1, Radio 2 DJs. So it had Tony Blackburn on there, David Hamilton was on Capital Gold, Paul Burnett, the great Kenny Everett, Graham Dean, a lot of the people that you'd now see on Boom Radio as well. And there used to be this great guy, he used to do the evening show on Capital Gold. He had a wonderful, a sort of a deep American accent called Randall Lee Rose. He used to play general music, but he used to play doo-wop music in as well. And I think, for me, why music tastes, when I talk about pop music, I like classical mainly and jazz, but for pop music, for me, it died out at the end of the 80s. And when I think, I analyse why I think that's because these golden oldies stations came in and I fell in love with them as a friend. And Capital Gold really was a very accessible, friendly radio station. It's what you want as a friend, you know, when you're living on your own, bringing that sort of outside world in. And then I went and lived on my, it was back with my parents, I moved, went and lived on my own. Particularly living on your own, having the radio, and it was like bringing in the out, as you said earlier, bringing in the outside world into your home, and it became a friend. And obviously I moved somewhere up north, so I couldn't listen to Capital. We were different now. It wasn't the days radio there back then was generally just purely local. You didn't have it to listen to them on the internet now. Didn't have the internet in those days. And it was, you know, it was properly local. So there was an equivalent golden oldies station where I lived that I listened to until, so Classic FM earlier, Classic FM came on, because that gave you an accessible view of the classics as well. And I transitioned, you know, in terms of stations to, you know, sets to listen to various pieces of hi-fi equipment. One amplifier I bought in the late 1990s is still going strong today. Mm. It's got a DAB tuner plugged into it, but it has its own FM tuner that still goes strong today, and it's probably still our best receiver in the house, even though my kids prefer to listen to just music on their phones, whereas this is proper good quality hi-fi sound. So yeah, so stations listened to are sort of, it was Classic FM, and then when we moved into the East Midlands, I listened to this Saga radio I liked a lot, and then that moved across into, was taken over and moved into Smooth Radio, and went a bit more like Radio 2's gone now, a bit less sort of, you know, as you say, the sort of older Vera Lynn. Well, I prefer to say Frank Sinatra, because I think, well, he's my favourite singer actually of all time, but yeah. But the Sinatra and people like that, it was the crooners, it was more, you know, old golden oldies music. And then I think now, more recently, I've, you know, since Boom Radio started, for me, as an accessible, friendly radio station without oldies, I'd probably say that's the best radio station that since the Capital Gold of the late 80s, when it first started, 90s, because though it doesn't have Tony Blackburn on, it has some of the great, you know, the great DJs, and they're all those people from the pioneering days of pirate radio and the early Radio 1 and the light, you know, Radio 2 as well. They're those friendly, accessible DJs who play great music, you know, the great 60s music and the 70s music.
I always find this, that, I mean, my own children, you know, do not listen to the radio.
Yeah.
Now, their argument probably would be, well, you know, if there's something you want to listen to in an age of Spotify or Apple Music or YouTube, you want to listen to something, you'll find it there. But for me, without those presenters' voices, there's no point to it. So in other words, for me, the music is contextualised by and the heritage of just what we've been talking about, that, you know, we'd be in a geographically maybe quite remote area, but we were catching up with what was going on, all the latest charts from London, etc. Yeah, yeah. And we would be imbibing all of that. And when I went through a period, and I will no doubt, as part of this reunion weekend, we've been asked to bring artefacts and talk about things that mattered to us at university. But I used to record a lot of music from the radio. Yeah. But this is the crucial bit. I'd always keep before and after the words of the presenters. And with some of those presenters now having passed on, you think actually the people who were on daytime radio too when I was at uni, very few of them are still alive. I mean, Ken Bruce is obviously not on radio too, but he's on Greatest Hits. But you think of Terry Wogan, or you think of Jimmy Young or John Dunn or Ed Stewart. Really very few from that era now are still alive. So when I hear those voices, it feels precious, because I think that maybe no one else has those particular recordings. In those days we didn't have the BBC catch-up service.
And I think it's valuable. I found some useful sites, like there's a site called Random Radio Jottings, who he occasionally puts up. He's recorded a lot of vintage radio programs as well, and it's quite interesting listening to things from his program. He's put some Alan Dell, for example, and other things. He's got, I think, an excerpt from David Hamilton when he was on his Radio 2 show, but you can still obviously listen to him on Boom Radio now as well. And when you think about some of their DJs, you've got Graham Dean, who was on Capital Gold, Breakfast Show on Capital Radio for many years. You've got David Hamilton's on there. You've got David Lloyd, who was in the East Midlands, you know, before So a lot of, and I think some of the people and other ILRs around the country, that independent local radio, that I necessarily haven't heard of, like Roger Day, because they weren't on the local radio where I was. And I think that's a shame that it's lost. So I think that stations like the one you're involved with, Cabin FM, and I also listen now to a big band show that's on another one called Dean Radio, that's in the Forest of Dean area, are really good, because they're, you know, that's where it should be, because you're reaching out to people locally, but bringing a local picture in, and maybe a national pitch, and being a friend and giving local stuff, and allowing, you've got more time to allow local people to comment or to dial in or whatever, to be part of that programme. So I think, you know, the BBC, regrettably now, with its local radio network, and ILR with these, just with these national brands now, it's a shame. So like the Cabin FM, like the other ones, and there's a small one in Derby that's just on the internet as well, they're good for being part of that local community and giving that local voice and local pitch. I think that's one thing that's a shame now, that's lost it.
And do you find that these days that the future of radio perhaps is those stations that allow those voices, literally the voices of the presenters, but the music from a different era? Do you think that for anybody today, if you want to hear the latest sounds, really is radio the place that, you know, if you were 30 or 40 years younger than you are now, do you think radio would be your go-to?
Yeah, I suppose, because my kids, like your kids, you were saying, oh, Dad, why do you listen to the radio? We use Spotify now, you know. And I'm like, well, to me, you can listen to tracks, or they play you music, or maybe the latest release that you might not hear. And that was the sort of great benefit of radio. Somebody sharing you a song you've never heard before, and you say, actually, that's a good song. So sometimes I've known to go out and, back in the day, go out and buy the record or CD of that song, because I'd heard it on the radio first. And, you know, just things like that. And I don't quite, I suppose they would argue that you've got algorithms that would do that for you, if you like a particular genre on Spotify. But I think you lose with those Spotify and things, and you can only get a voice. Sure, eventually maybe they might make up a radio show with AI or something, which would be terrible, I think, because you lose that personal touch of an actual real life, you know, actual person actually sharing stuff with you as well. And when we talk about the accessibility, I'd listened to sort of Classic M for years, but I found myself recently, as well as when I feel like different music genres, and I listen to Boom Radio still as well, and some certain presenters on there like David Hamilton, and also I still listen to one programme on Radio 2, which is the only programme they really have oldies on, which is Tony Blackburn on the Saturday morning, Sound of the 60s. Great programme, still great, amazing, the guy, and I like David Hamilton, they're still going great and still sounding really fresh in their 80s, both of them, you know.
And doing it live as well.
Doing it live, yes, he really does it live. Tony Blackburn, very rarely does he record it. He gets up in his 80s to travel into London for 6 o'clock and sounds live and fresh.
And he does all these Facebook posts in which he's outside broadcasting, as well as in the studio.
He does,
And actually, that's been a huge influence on me, because he knows how to use the technology. When the Queen passed away in 2022, he was talking about how even then, when he was obviously very young and the Queen died, you know, his family had all the, you know, they wanted all the latest technology so they could, for example, watch the coronation on TV.
Yeah.
You know, looking back now, very antiquated technology.
Yeah.
But it was always about making the most of the resources open to you and drawing
and
on them
that.
And using them.
Yeah, and he does that. But actually, I found recently, and I know it's controversial with some sort of so-called purists, but I found Radio 3 has become more, since they've got a guy who was a controller at Classic FM, Sam Jackson, has come in. That has become more accessible. So I don't, because I'm at work, I don't often listen to it during the day, but I heard here this morning two presenters, a breakfast presenter on Radio 3 and the mid-morning one, who's now a regular presenter, they were doing like the classic DJ handover between themselves. And I thought, well, that's really good, because that makes, and that's brought it back to making it like a radio station, an accessible radio station that's accessible to people and is a and he's a friend as well, you see. So I'd put radio, you know, Classic FM without the adverts, I suppose, and Radio 3 up there now as well, actually. And I think it's recently won Station of the Year as well. So I think people are recognising that, you know, because of they've done changes, that the key thing is making it accessible. I think, you know, in like you were saying, you know, at night and stuff, you can play sort of the avant-garde and other stuff for people, you know, sort of a non-off-peak slots. But when a lot of people are listening, the important thing is to make it friendly and accessible, because it is a friend for people. You know, I'm now married, of course, but 20-odd years. But before then, it was like when I was at home, I used to have it on a lot more, because it was like a friend. It was like you're on your own, but you could be part of the outside world when you actually listen to the radio, and these people in the studio are all, you know, all friends to you as well, you know.
And what you say about the handover, you're right. I think sometimes there would even be promos for, you know, Ken Bruce and Jimmy Young, and they'd play that, was it Peaches and Creams that reunited from the 70s? And because, you know, if one of them had been on holiday for a few weeks, or then the other one on holiday, and then, you know, so people would tune in just to hear their banter at 11 in the morning. Yeah. But just broadening the conversation here, because obviously nostalgia is infusing this chat. I mean, do you think, I mean, the role that nostalgia plays in your life, do you think that the way you look back on the past, and maybe, you know, the good and the bad, because there's always that question about nostalgia has the sort of the sadness built into it, it's the bitter and the sweet. But do you think that that can be a really positive thing to draw on? You know, sort of we're ruminating here about a time that, apart from those recordings that you can get on various radio, you know, online sites, that they don't exist anymore. And therefore we're channeling something that to our own children, as you know, we're talking about no real interest in that. So, you know, what role does nostalgia play for you?
I think it sort of gives you, it's a comfort, it can almost be a comfort zone or a comfort blanket now to me, going back to it. And so, for example, with social media, on Facebook, I was getting very, until this Lampeter University celebrated its bicentenary a couple of years ago in 2022, I'd almost like got disillusioned with Facebook, because it was a lot of keyboard warriors sharing their sort of views on sort of a range of things, you know, and I was getting fed up with it, and there was quite bitter some of the comments back between various people just over Facebook, whereas I prefer to have a, you know, a dialogue like now. And so I was getting very disillusioned, and then through this bicentenary, and I happened to see that they featured this on a Songs of Praise episode, this place, and that was, which was quite interesting. And it rekindled my sort of interest in, well, you know, my first university, and I found these various Facebook groups and I joined them. And so my time on social media now is, like I comment on some of your stuff, Chris, of course, is wallowing in that nostalgia with people that had that same experience of being here. And what's amazing is how on this reunion weekend, you know, you were the decade below me or so. Yeah. There's other people here who are the decade above me in the 70s. I was here in the 80s. But we can get on, and, you know, we weren't friends or students together, but we do the nostalgia about, you know, our time at university. And a lot of those had the same shared experience. Some of the sort of lecturers were the same. Obviously, people, as we said earlier, people move on and retire and that sort of thing. But it's a sort of common block, and I think it's a sort of gives you a comfort blanket to help you keep going when you look at some of the geopolitical environment in the world today. It's something that I suppose in some ways can give you some sort of hope and be a comfort blanket. And for me, I'm happy that I've lived through the decades and the years that I've been and seen technology change. Sometimes, you know, I'd like to see more, but I think you've got boom radio, more sort of vintage stuff on the radio and the technology. I think that particularly the streaming, the digital, has lost the live element, because you truly only get live radio now, this would be a bit controversial, FM, because there's always a delay on DAB, for instance. So it's only a slight delay, but I suppose you can sort of argue that away. But you feel that when you listen on FM now, that the presenter in the studio is actually, as he's talking, it's coming out of the loudspeaker on your radio.
And tell me, this is to wrap up our chat here, because we've spent a lot of time talking about the road of the past, but would you consider yourself to be a looking back or a looking forward type of person?
Yeah, I suppose I think the past can help contribute to what we're what sort of happens now. I think history is very important to certainly learn the lessons from the past in history, what's happening in the geopolitical situation in the world today as well. And that's again where, again, the history of humanities, big humanities subject, where things like subjects like history are so important for people still to study, I think. So I think, you know, I look forward to the future, what I've got in the future, and I recognise as well that things change as well in the future as well.
Well, Stephen, so glad that we caught up, because whole year ago we were talking about doing this podcast, but I really was quite keen, for some of the reasons that we've been talking about, to do it in person rather than doing it over Zoom.
It's better, much better in person.
But thank you so much for being my guest this week.
Thank you very much, Chris.